I didn't know I was going to be up here by myself. How many of y'all are not from the Delta? Wow. Okay, well, let me tell you a little bit about the Delta. And this is just personally the way I see it. You're standing on the best of the best of the best. The topsoil and the subsoil that we have in our area came everywhere from Minnesota all the way down the river and was deposited right here. And we thank you for this soil, those of y'all that are north of us. It is some of the richest soil that I guess can be. And the Delta is unique. Really, when you stop and think about it, there's no place else in the United States or around that's just quite like the Delta. But we want to hold on to this soil, and that's kind of why we're here today. And just while we're here, I want to tell you something. This slab that we're sitting on right here, the reason I didn't concrete this whole shed, this is actually a memorial. So this farm is real old. This is a memorial to our old shop that used to be right here. We've moved the shop since. But the shop was right here, and this shop saw everything from mule farming, sharecropping, on up through the first mechanization, first tractors, first one-row cotton pickers, then on up through computerized tractors, and on up till today. And it finally succumbed to the termites, and kind of a funny land gap we had on this deal. When we tore this shop down, it was just a one-story small building because the tractors were small back in those days, and it had a loft up in the top that nobody ever used, at least I thought they didn't. And when we tore it down, it was about rotten. And we started tearing it down, and all of a sudden the whole ceiling fell in, just crashed to the ground. When it did, we went running there and looked, and there was a tiny little hole, used to be where you could throw stuff up into the attic, up into the loft. When it hit the ground, there was about 3 feet deep in half pint and pint Kentucky Tavern whiskey bottles. And some of the labor over the years had kept the Kentucky Tavern factory going. In fact, after the last old guy died, old Leroy died, I think the Kentucky Tavern went back to just running one shift. But anyway, I'd like to introduce, it's Gil Stovall sitting right here. Raise your hand, Gil, please. Norma Weiland right next to him. Norma's been the bookkeeper for 54 years here. I mean, she's been through from can to can't. And she started when she was 8 years old. So, don't ask her how old she is. Anyway, Stovall Plantation, we welcome you here today. It was founded in 1838. It is now, as far as we know, the oldest farm in this county, still owned by the original family. And to tell you how this farm got started real quick, the Mississippi River was wild back in those days. Even after last year, we know it's still wild. But the Mississippi River was wild. And around in the 1830s, the river changed its course. And there was one settlement in Coma County at the time that was on the river called Port Royal. And I believe it was it's now on the land that Ms. Margaret McKee, she's here somewhere, there she is over there, owns today. But anyway, it was the original settlement in Coma County, and of course it was very primitive. Everybody settled along the river because that was the primary means of transportation back in those days. People that settled back here in those days were doing one or two things. They were either logging, farming, or running from somebody, because I don't know why else they would come here. But anyway, in the 1830s, there were Choctaw and Chickasaw Indians living in this area. In fact, out around here, there's more than 80 active sites that have been determined for Indians in this area. In the 1830s, through the Treaty of Dancing Rabbit and through the Treaty of Pontotoc, the land was taken from the Indians. The Indians were moved to Oklahoma, and the land was put up for sale for $1.25, $1.30 an acre. Colonel William Olden, who was a resident of Port Royal, elected not to follow the crowd up the river to a new city called Friars Point because Port Royal was going to be abandoned because the river was no longer there. Colonel Olden moved down here and bought the prairie place which is right up the road here, part of Stovall Plantation, and settled there and started logging and farming. The Indians had already been growing corn on this particular place. And he built a home here in 1848, and is currently the oldest residence in Cahoma County that's still being lived in. Out in front of his house was, and it shows up on a map, an interesting point here, and you'll be able to look at it on this map of the farm later. Out in front of his house was a field that we commonly call now the racetrack cut. At that time, the Indians and later the owners of the land had a little racetrack where they raced ponies and horses out there. And up until several years ago when we started running this big tillage equipment, you could fly over it after a rain and still see that circle dry out first from that racetrack. So the history goes way, way back. The home here, the oldest home here, went through the Civil War. There were musket ball holes in the wall, and some of the eyes of the portraits were punched out by the Union soldiers. Well, Colonel Oldham had a daughter who married a Fowler, and then Fowler's daughter married William Howard Stovall II. And that's when the Stovall family entered into Stovall Plantation, and that was in 1866. And incidentally, while I'm thinking about it, that point of woods right behind that barn over there is the first survey marker in Cahoma County. It has JWS written on top of it for John W. Stovall. And FYI also, a lot of you heard of the Great Flood of 2011. Where you're standing right now, if it wasn't for our levee system, which is about 3 miles from here, that keeps the river out, last year we would be standing in about 7.5 feet of water where we are right now. So the levee is very important to us in the Delta also. W.H. Stovall II had a son, W.H. Stovall III. And he was a World War I ace, shot down 6 Germans. World War II, he worked with the senior command for the 8th Air Force. And Colonel Stovall came back here, and he took this farm to a new level in conservation practices back in his day. Back in the late 50s and early 60s, Norma was doing a lot of surveying here. A lot of this land was landformed back during that time and put in short runs. And at the time, pads and pipes were put in. And that was way back in the late 50s and early 60s. Also, he had actually put in some underground line here, which was steel that ran along that gravel road over there where he could utilize more water from one well to water all of the land south of the road there, which is real interesting because it's a common practice that we do today. And the only problem was back in those days we had to water with this heavy butyl rubber pipe, which weighed about 300 pounds a piece when it was dry and about 600 pounds when it had mud on it. Also about that time, about the time of the Depression, there was a young boy who moved here at about the age of 3 and moved here with his aunt. His name was McKinley Morganfield. And at the age of 7, he learned to play the harmonica. And that stimulated his interest in music. And of course, this was during the Depressionary times. It was really tough times. And later he learned to play the guitar with the help of Robert Johnson and son Thomas. And the guy I'm talking about is Muddy Waters. And Muddy, in 1941, he was, up until that time, he was kind of playing local gigs. He was really good. And of course, he was singing blues. And really, if my opinion of the blues during those times, I'm really not a fan of that music because it was really sad. It was tough times. Nobody had anything. But his music evolved, and in 1941, Alan Lomax came here for the Library of Congress, and also for Fisk University, to make recordings of cultural music in the South. And he came here and he recorded Muddy Waters on the porch of his cabin, which sat right over there where there's a marker on the road. The cabin now has been donated by the family to the Blues Museum in Clarksdale. Hope maybe some of y'all will be able to see it. Muddy Waters was the father of the blues, in my opinion, and he led it metastasized into the music that we have today. Eric Clapton, Mick Jagger, ZZ Top, all of these guys attribute their music successes to today from Muddy Waters. So welcome to the home of the blues here too. Stovall Plantation had a 154-year history of raising cotton. And about 6 years ago, we quit. We weren't making any money. And we went to grains. And today, we're back raising a small amount of cotton. We're raising corn. We had a great wheat crop. We'll be planting soybeans behind the wheat. And also, about 350 acres of pink eye purple hull peas. We grow different vegetables for a company called Pick Sweet, if you've ever heard of it, in Bells, Tennessee. And this year we'll be growing the purple hull peas. In the past we've grown turnip greens, cabbage. Cabbage didn't work too good. We've grown potatoes, snap beans, cucumbers, crowder peas, and sweet corn. Let's talk a little bit about tillage. You know, about almost 20 years ago, but when Roundup started coming out, we started going to a minimum till situation on this farm, and actually a lot of no-till. And, of course, we were controlling all the weeds with no problem, and it was really kind of a life of leisure. We'd plant the crop, we'd spray it, we'd kill everything, we'd come back through, and we were relying solely on Roundup for our minimum till and no-till operation on this farm. Well, after spending a lot of time at the lake and not working, that started to play out. And the first thing we saw coming up was mare's tail resistance to glyphosate. And then after that, Johnson grass resistance. Multiple weed resistance to this. But then along came along the 800-pound gorilla, the Palmer pigweed. And the reason Palmer pigweed is such a problem is it became totally glyphosate resistant in our area. It has, and I'm not just making this up, most adult plants have 1 million seeds per plant. And once you get one go to seed, and it didn't take but one to ruin a field. And in that process, tillage is one thing that will help you reduce the population of Palmer pigweed on the farm, and just one of the tools. And we've gone back to tillage. And we're kind of in between technology right now. I feel like we're going to be back in conservation tillage full force as we get rid of this Palmer pigweed and come along with new technology to be able to control it. One of the problems we did with Roundup, and we were all guilty of it. We were lazy about mixing other chemicals, tank mixing chemicals, to control all the weeds at the time. A few went to seed, and here we are today. About 2 years ago, NRCS came to me and said, look, we're looking for an area to put in a tailwater recovery pond. And so I went home and slept on it a couple of nights. I was real interested. And I got thinking about, on the back part of this farm, we have an area back here that's kind of like a slingshot. It's two huge ditches that come down through the farm, and they join up at the bottom, and where they join up, they go into Harris Bio-Drainage District. And we had a pivot on that land, and the land was gumbo land, and so it was... That pivot was on 560-acre field, and trying to water buckshot with 560-acre pivot just doesn't work. So I said, well, this will be great. We'll split this half in two, let the pivot water the top half of it. We'll put in a tailwater system on the lower half of it. We did. We gave up 20 acres of productive land and put in the tailwater pond. And all this stuff started coming. I didn't realize the big picture at the time. All I was thinking about, hey, I'm going to have a way to water my crop, and it's going to be a lot cheaper than pumping it out of the ground. But in the process of building this pond, the guys from Delta Farm who were running the show, and NRCS, we came in here and we put in two stage ditches, started putting in weirs, started landforming, putting in pipes and pads, and got everything just pristine perfect. And then put in a tailwater pond and put in a holding pond so that we could pump out of the holding pond into the tailwater pond. And then after we implemented all this, we started grid sampling, our soil sampling, grid sampling, and then we started applying fertilizer. We started setting our yield goals. Just say we wanted 220 bushels of corn. We'd set a goal at that. We'd apply the amount of fertilizer that was needed for to reach that goal. And by grid sampling, we would find areas that needed more fertilizer and areas that needed less. So all this was a big picture, and it was all coming together to me. So all the things that we did, the grid sampling, the tailwater recovery, putting in pipes and pads, two-stage ditches, weirs, that led to water quality. And the tailwater pond capturing the water, either rainwater or tailwater from our other irrigation, because see, this tailwater pond is capturing water from a whole 1,500 acres up north of that that comes down through the farm. We were not only improving water quality, we were improving our water usage. We were using our water on the farm more effective. What fell as rain, or what we lost through tailwater runoff. Another thing I can't say enough about landforming, as far as managing water. When you've got it landformed, most of the water reaches the end at the same time. There's a lot less management needed when it all waters out evenly. But all this water quality thing really got me to thinking, you know, one of my favorite things to do is fish in the Gulf of Mexico. I love saltwater fishing. And I fished everywhere. I thought about it the other day, from Lake Calcasieu, which is south of Lake Charles, all the way through Cocodrie, Leeville, Grand Isle, Empire, around to Biloxi, Gulfport, Perdido, Key, Florida, over there by Mobile, and then all the way down to Isla Mirada in the Florida Keys. And I love speckled trout, redfish, snapper, grouper, tarpon. And we have a lot of water that comes out of this Mississippi River that's dead water. And we got a hypoxia problem. And it greatly affects the fishing. And I've been down there before, and many times when you have like a red tide, or you have a storm that blows a lot of this water from the Mississippi River discharge over towards Chandelier Island, where I like to fish, and the fishing's dead. There's nothing there. And I love the Gulf of Mexico. And anything we can do, anything we can put on the ground right here, it may just seem like just a spit in the river of what we're doing. But if we can spread this around, we can greatly reduce the amount of nutrients that go down the river and go into the Gulf. And like I say, I love to fly fish down there. I love to catch any kind of fish I can, even one that you have to throw back. And so I feel like what we're doing here on the farm is ultimately not only helping us manage the water supply, because we know there's at least six times as many wells in this delta as it was 25 years ago. And those numbers probably aren't right, but that's a start. And there are wells going in every year, and we're running out of water. Sunflower County down here is running out of water. We've got to figure out a way to manage this water. Tailwater ponds are a great way. You know what's going to happen? One of these days, we're going to be limited to the amount of water we can pump out of there, and a lot of farmers are going to find a lot of innovative ways to store water on their farm. And I think we're going to have a head start on them. Last, and I know I've probably gone beyond what I need to say, but last... we have a lot of interesting old history around here. And we had Gil found several years ago a box of steamboat packet tickets from steamboats delivering stuff to the farm. And we also found a old circular from LSU, you know, a land grant college way back in the old days, and it was called, the little pamphlet was called The First Laws of Farming. And it told you what to do back in the 1800s as far as farming. The first law was plant your crop on your farm to feed yourself and your people on your farm. The second thing it said to do was plant the crop for your animals, because we farmed with mules back in those days, and we had cows, pigs, horses, and whatever on the farm. The third thing you do is you plant your cash crop. Now, also in this pamphlet, it was pretty complete, because it also said that all the women you had on your farm, you're going to need lots of labor, so make sure that they're healthy and they stay pregnant, because you're going to need a lot of workers. But anyway, I think the laws of farming have changed now. I think what we need to do now is hold on to what we got. I think we've got to implement a lot of conservation practices. We need to keep the topsoil here. We need to keep the nutrients on our farm. We need to keep everything we put on our farm on the farm as much as we can. And I think that's going to be one of our main laws of farming. And hopefully we can spread this up and down the Mississippi River Valley. Hey, I appreciate y'all coming today, and I hope you enjoy your stay here at Stovall Farms.